שבוע טוב ומבורך ותזכו לשנים רבות נעימות וטובות. Last week we met, it was Erev Rosh Hashanah. Now already we are in Aser Timei Teshuvah, preparing for Yom Kippurim. The Shabbat Shuva Derasha is never an easy Derasha. For many listeners, it's an uncomfortable Derasha. For the speaker, it's also a difficult speech to give because the purpose of the speech of Teshuvah is to arouse the people to change, to make amends, to make adjustments in their lifestyle, which is never easy. Sometimes the listener gets offended that the rabbi comes along and gives a rebuke and is preaching to the congregation what they're supposed to be doing, what they're not supposed to be doing. So I warn you, this is going to be one of those uncomfortable speeches. But it's the nature of a teshuvah speech. The purpose of the speech is to make a person feel a little uncomfortable, unnerved. Hopefully to the extent where he'll change and not resent the speaker. Mesi'ata d'shmaya. Starting on Rosh Hashanah and for the next 10 days, we hear a lot of names. Names that will repeat themselves over and over in the Tefillah. Anenu Elohe Abraham, Anenu. Ufahad Yitzhak, Anenu. Abir Yaakov, Anenu. Elahad Meir B'Zchute Debar Yochai. We pray in the merit of Yosef, Aharon, David, Ushlomo. We mention the zealotry of Pinchas Kana'a. We even talk about Eli and Mordechai v'Esther b'Shushan Abira. We mention all the names of the Tzaddikim. However, this Rosh Hashanah, we have become accustomed to be listening or to hearing other names. Mind you, not of Tzaddikim. Names like Harvey, Irma, Jose, and Maria. Like I said, not names of Tzaddikim, but actually names of hurricanes that have battered this country, whether it's in Houston, or the Southeast, or the Caribbean, over the past couple of months. And the scientists have weighed in, and they have said that this latest water phenomenon, as they call it now in quotations, is the new normal. And they assert that it is as a result of having dealt with our environment in a cavalier manner. And now we're paying the price. This new norm that they talk about applies not only to weather, but to the general landscape of our lives. The entire moral and ethical situation of contemporary society. We live in a society today that is barely recognizable when compared to that of only a few decades ago. The new norm today, for the most part, goes uncontested. Alternate lifestyles, dress code, the way people talk, violations of consciousness, things that are totally out of place. Reminds me of a story in the Gemara of a rabbi called Honiya Ma'agal, where he went to sleep for 70 years. When he woke up and he came to the Beit Midrash, he said, "I'm Honiya Ma'agal." And they didn't believe him. And they didn't recognize him. Honiya Ma'agal came back to a generation 70 years later, and he found himself out of place and irrelevant. I would imagine the same thing would be with our great-grandparents. If they would come to this generation and they would see all the new norms, all the new accepted morality codes of society, they would see the way children talk to their parents. If they would see the language that's used in general, the chutzpah, the insolence, and many more new norms, I'm sure our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, like Honiya Ma'agal, would feel out of place. And they would feel irrelevant. The society is changing every single day. I came tonight to talk about this new norm in context of a Teshuvah speech. I cannot discuss every topic. There is insanity all around us. I cannot analyze and give advice to all of these insanities, as the Gemara refers to them as Ruach Shtut. There is much Ruach Shtut in the society today. All of them must be dealt with. But I said, I must speak tonight about the most important of them. And that is what I refer to as the digital insanity. That has to do with the addiction of our generation to screens. Digital insanity. Mind you, that there's something very interesting about this shtut, or some might even go as far as to call it this avodah zarah, this new form of idolatry. The Gemara tells us in the olden days everybody would have an idolatry in their pocket, and they would constantly take it out and make wishes to it and pay homage to it. And if they lost it, they would cry over it. Something about this insanity that must be known as an introduction. In marketing meaning selling products, there's a new term that has been developed They call it dog fooding. I don't know if you heard of it. Recently, a CEO of a pet food company went into a meeting of all buyers, and he took the dog food and he ate it himself. And he told the buyers that if it's fit for human consumption, certainly it's good for your dog. And that now became the new slogan for sellers that want to promote their product. They dog food it, which means the best way to sell a product is to show the customer that you yourself use the product. That would be very convincing. That you're not just trying to sell something. You're using it yourself. It's very convincing. However, there are exceptions to this. Exceptions, I mean, is that products that the inventors themselves don't use or don't use as much as you think they do. A few years ago, there was an interview by the New York Times. They interviewed Steve Jobs of the Apple fame. It was an interview that was done by phone. It was later printed in the paper. At the end of the interview, the interviewer asked Steve Jobs, which was thought to be a softball question, an easy question. The answer turned out to be very shocking. This is after he goes on to talk about how magical the screen of the iPad is. He said there's nothing like it. It's dazzling. The images are lucid and vivid and clear. The iPad and its screens provide experiences unmatched and unprecedented in history. At the end of the interviewer asks Jobs, "So, tell me about your children. They must love playing with all these gadgets." To that, Jobs says, "Oh no, we don't let them play with these screens." Which was very telling. Here a man made his whole career in selling these items, but he didn't dog food it. And the explanation is that he felt that they're very toxic to the children and to those that use it. So therefore they are very have great restrictions on how much the kids can use these screens. Only later to find out that he and many of the high-tech people send their kids to schools where they don't introduce screens until the 9th or 10th grade. I thought that to be very telling. What does he know about screens that we don't know? Now you might tell me, well, who's Steve Jobs to give us Musar? He's a goy. You know, why should he be why should he even be mentioned tonight? Well, normally I wouldn't quote him, but I believe that he's a Baal Teshuvah. Because on his deathbed, he wrote the following. "At this moment, lying on the sick bed and recalling my whole life, I realize that all the recognition and wealth that I took so much pride in have paled and become meaningless in the face of impending death. In the darkness, I look at the green lights from the life-supporting machines and hear the humming mechanical sounds. I can feel the breath of God, of death, drawing closer. Now I know when we have accumulated sufficient wealth to last our lifetime, We should pursue other matters that are unrelated to wealth. Should be something that is more important. And then he goes on to regret the fact that he became over addicted to the wealth that he had, wealth that he would never be able to spend in many lifetimes over. The overemphasis of wealth. So at the end of his life, he has regret. And he says that, oh no, we don't let our children use these gadgets as much as you think we do. So I came tonight to talk about digital insanity, about the new norms. I remind you what the Satmar Rebbe said in his time. He said that walking down a single block is fraught with more nisyonot than a lifetime in Europe of old. The nisyonot today are even more than that. The Satmar Rebbe is telling you to walk down one block has more tests than all of old Europe. Today, of course, with all the screens that we're exposed to, those nisyonot have been magnified. My opinion is not like some of my colleagues that say you have to throw them out and you have to break them and you have to ban them and you have to ostracize anybody that has these gadgets. I come from a different opinion. I have put together tonight what I believe is the 8 problems that we have with screens. I didn't put it in any specific order, but I believe all 8 are definite problems. And I believe that this is where Teshuvah must begin. Teshuvah for our generation doesn't begin with Kemach Yashan and Halav Yisrael. We have much more serious problems than that. Unfortunately, we didn't get to that level yet, to start worrying about all those niceties of Judaism. We're grappling with a much greater problem. And therefore our teshuvah must be in this realm. Otherwise, we're skirting the main issue. The Yetzer Hara will tell us to make all sorts of resolutions in other areas, knowing that this area is the main handicap of our generation. And therefore, if you make teshuvah in this realm, you'll save yourself from 8 major problems, some of them being major sins. To me, there's no other area in our generation that needs more fixing than this area. Number one, this might be in order of importance. Things that we look at on screens that are forbidden. Harambam writes that people rationalize when they look at inappropriate material and they say, I didn't do anything, I didn't touch anybody, nor did I commit acts of immorality. I only looked. But they do not realize that that is forbidden as well. As the Torah writes, "Velo taturu acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem." Screens pose a great threat to the eyes. And when the eyes become compromised, so the soul becomes very, very tainted. It's possible people go to synagogue and they pray, They do all sorts of mitzvot. But the soul is soiled and dirty because of the images that enter through the eyes. My Rabbi Chacham Baruch Alev HaShalom used to say, there's a lot of Torah in America. But then he would throw his hands up in the air and say, but where is the Kiddushah? Kiddushah is found in their Einayim. And there are many amongst us that do not even realize, but they have become addicted. Looking at things that are inappropriate on screens actually creates a chemical process in the brain which mirrors drug addiction. And then it becomes something that must be fed. And it becomes an escape. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of things on the screens that are good to look at. I don't say no. We can look at a page of a Gemara. We're able to read unbelievable Devarei Torah from the Hachamim. That's what makes it good. It's like a car. If a car is controlled properly, so it's a good thing. But if it's out of control, it can become a weapon. As we see what our enemies do in the Middle East with cars and trucks. It all depends how you use it. But one must come to the reality that if he's using screens in order to view inappropriate materials, it's a problem. It's a terrible problem. I spoke to great rabbis that are experts in addiction. And I asked them, I said, what do you tell students that have become addicted to this immorality? Is it fixable? They gave three solutions that I would tell you tonight. This is where teshuvah comes in. This is teshuvah, what I'm telling you now. Teshuvah doesn't mean this, banging your chest. Teshuvah is in action. The first thing he said is obviously what you know already, is a filter. Now it shouldn't bother you to put a filter, because if you're not interested in inappropriate material anyway, so the filter shouldn't bother you. I have a filter, I still can get the weather, I can still get stock quotes, I still get the basic news. I have access to Learn Torah, Daily Halakha, some websites that we like to listen to. I don't find it as a bother. It's true, sometimes the filter works too good and I'm blocked out of appropriate material. I'm willing to take that inconvenience and risk as opposed to then compromising my eyes. I don't think it's an option today to have these gadgets without the proper filters and safety nets. I guess if we had a loaded gun in our homes, we would probably put a lock on it as well. Most of us have alarm pads on our homes to protect the home as well. Most things that are important to us, we protect them. Well, the computers are important to us, but they also serve as a liability. The filter helps. But I want you to know something else. This is what Rabbi Tversky told me. He said an amazing thing. In order for a person to become an un-addict, or as they say in the addiction world, sober, sobriety, when it comes to looking at things that are inappropriate, cannot take place before 90 days of being clean. It takes 90 days. The brain creates programs when you fall into bad habits. And to change those programs, it takes 90 days. Mark your calendars. Today is the third day of Tishri. Why don't you set yourself free today and accept upon yourself a teshuvah, 90 days. I'm not looking at inappropriate things on screens. That means it'll take you to Tishri, to Heshvan, to Kislev, to Tevet. That's great news. So you're really basically accepting upon yourself this until the end of Hanukkah. And on the eighth night of Hanukkah, you make a seudah. And you'll make a celebration. Because once you reach the 90 days, already the pattern in your brain goes back to normal, default position. You're not healed, because we're never healed. But you're much better off. I then added, I said it's true that the science talks about 90 days of trying to change any habit. But the Torah was onto the 90-day rule or the 90 concept rule to change habits. When they talked about the law of saying Murid Atal in the summer, and they said, what if somebody doesn't know if he said Murid Atal? So they said, well, if he's within 30 days of Pesach, he has to assume he said Mashiv Aruach Murid HaGeshem. But if he's after 30 days from Pesach, he could assume he said Murid Atal. What's the magic of 30 days? Well, the Hachamim say, because in 30 days, there's 90 Amidot. So for 90 times you said Murid Atal, then you could assume that you said Murid Atal. It takes 90 amidot to change a pattern. So the magic number 90 was around from the times of Hazal. And I added, a bad man that's addicted, we call him a rasha. That's what it is, it's a rasha. And when he cures himself, what do we call the rasha? A tzaddik. Well, tzaddik is the letter tzaddik, which is 90. Tzaddik is somebody that can go 90 days. Then already he can call himself tzaddik. So that's something that I would tell you to do as a second advice. The third advice. Recently I became aware of a website called Guard Your Eyes. The rabbi who started the website actually called me up recently from Israel, made me familiar with it, and asked me if I would offer chizuk to the tens of thousands of people that have joined this website called Guard Your Eyes. I said, well, I don't know what it is. Let me look. Let me see what it is first to see if I want to be part of this, chizuk. Very impressed. You start to see God-fearing people that are grappling with this problem, and they give each other chizuk, and there's stories, there's mishalim, and now they have rabbis giving divrei Torah, and you get three or four divrei chizuk during the day, and it keeps a person on his toes, it keeps a person on God. So that would be my third advice to you. Get a filter, 90 days, set yourself a goal until after Hanukkah, the eighth night of Hanukkah, that's the celebration night. And register to the website called Guard Your Eyes. Again, I'm not telling you to take a hammer and break your screens. Although some rabbis will tell you that. It's not my opinion. My opinion is to deal with it. Some rabbis will say, don't drive. I say, put a seatbelt on. Don't drink and drive. Drive safely. Be aware. I say the same thing regarding screens. Shemitah Ta'inayim is number one. Number two, which is just as important, which is not talked about, is the waste of time. even if things are, let's say, considered not sinful, or just the amount of time that we spend on apps and on games and on amusement and on news and on weather and on updates, it just takes a lot of time. And unfortunately, it's a lot of wasted time. Our rabbis are very strict about time. Where they say stealing money is bad, but stealing somebody's time is worse. Money I can pay back. I can't pay you back your time. Time is something that's lo nitan lehishabon. It's not given to return. We come to this world only once, and time is of the essence. The Hafetz Chaim, this time of year, when he would make his Hashbon Nefesh, his calculations, if I'm not mistaken, once he broke down because he could not, was not able to justify maybe 45 seconds over the last year. He didn't know what he did with 45 seconds. And for this, it caused him much grief. Imagine living with that level where he knows every moment down to 45 seconds. It was the Hafetz Chaim that changed from shoelaces to loafers because he calculated how much wasted time is in tying the shoes every morning. Maybe that's extreme for us. I'm not saying that we have to start there. But the wasted thousands of hours in the course of a year clearly poses a threat. It's a problem. I mean, we're asking God in the next 10 days, we want life. Chaim, Chaim, Chaim. And God says to do what? To slice fruit? To eat dots? To do what? To serve, to waste time, to do things of bitul zeman. Why would I give you something that you're going to waste? Instead, my solution to that is, go to learntorah.com. I cannot speak for my colleagues, but I think we have, b'chasdei Hashem, over 2,600 shiurim. That'll keep you busy for a few years. When you finish, by then we'll probably have 3,000 shiurim. All the websites. I know students that have studied Shas from their screen. I know students that got Simicha, became rabbis with ordination online. I have students that became Kabbalists from studying Shiurim online. So today, there's great opportunities. You could turn this item that's a liability into an asset. Chabavadya Yosef alav shalom, when he made the vidui on Yom Kippur, Moshe Habusha, the Hazan, told me this. He prayed with the rabbi for many years. He said, when would the rabbi break down? At what point? When he would say, Bitalnu Talmud Toratecha. We wasted time, we didn't study. Who studied like a Chafa Bajya? Who was more diligent? Who was more aggressive? Who was more uncompromising with his time? But the great Sadiqim, they know that with all the time that they learned, but maybe there was some time that was wasted. Daddy started to cry like a baby. I'm not saying we have to be matmidim harachem avadya, but to go and willingly just waste hours and hours of time a day, it's a avon, it's a sin. It's part of the insanity. The third thing that must be noted is the loss of concentration. The screen has caused us to lose the ability to concentrate. Especially the men, when we study Gemara, Gemara is a very tedious subject. It's a flow, and you have to hold the thought. It's a question and answer, Rashi's opinion, Tosfot, you're building. It needs much concentration. No less than, I guess, a doctor that's in surgery needs concentration, or a pilot that's flying a 747 jet. Science has proven that once a person interrupts himself by being distracted by an external force, it takes 20 minutes to regain full concentration. So a person thinks that when he's learning, he just goes and answers a text for 1 second, he has broken his concentration. Now it takes 20 minutes to get back to that level. That's why people today cannot focus. Because the gadget is always vying for our attention, so we can never do something for an elongated period of time to get into it. Because the interruption is immediate and so accessible. The solution to that would be what some of the members in the Kollel do. They bring their phones into the Kollel. I guess they don't want to leave it in the car, they don't want it to get lost. But they put it on airplane mode. So therefore they're not interrupted by daily updates and beeps for the latest news or the latest hadush. It waits until after, and therefore they're able to stay focused on what's in front of them. We cannot learn when we have these gadgets interrupting us every 2 minutes. That's not called learning. Studying Gemara in the Talmud is not reading a newspaper. Reading a newspaper, you only need maybe 5% of your mental energies. Studying Gemara, you need to be fully engrossed. These things will not be able to, they take away from our concentration. So you see, making teshuvah about screens affects your learning. Number four, it doesn't leave time for ourselves. Recently I saw a study. I don't have a picture of it, but I'll try to show it to you what it looked like. They showed from 2007, maybe when the iPad came out, to 2017. They just show rectangular boxes. In the rectangular box they show average sleep is 8 hours a day. So that's already sleep. Then they show 8 hours work. So you're at 16 hours. Then they show the box filled with 3 hours of personal hygiene. I think that includes bathroom, eating, showering, etc. So that takes you to 19 hours. The rest of the box is white. That they refer to as personal time. What happens in those 5 hours? So they say that the stuff that they speak about at your funeral happens in those 5 hours. That's the funeral talk. The good guy, the charity, the visiting the sick, the mitzvot, the Torah, all the good things that they did, the good deeds, the kindness, the thoughtfulness, the being a good father, the being a great husband, all that happens in those 5 hours. It doesn't happen when you're sleeping. When you're working, we do good things, but it's not really there. In the bathroom, nothing great happens. It
happens in those 5 hours. That's the 5 hours where we develop ourselves. Well, they noticed that in 2007, people had 5 hours a day to do that. Especially if you're Jewish, you have a lot in those 5 hours to do. That would include praying, it would include learning, Gemilut Hasadim, etc. But they noticed, and the pattern is still happening, from 2007 to 2017, that box of 5 hours is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. What's taking its place? Screens. Because everybody has 27 apps. And they spend 5 minutes on each app a day. Go do the math. All of a sudden you start to see 2-3 hours a day just by doing nothing, just by keeping up on all the apps. Just by answering everything, just by keeping up to date. Now in 2017, it's pathetic. You look at the box of 5 hours, it's down to a tiny sliver. I don't know how much minutes is left in that box in an average person. They told you the minutes. I forgot the number. If I'm generous, I'll say it's down to an hour. Nobody's going to say at the funeral how adept they were on the computer and how fast they were able to type and so on and so forth. So we're not leaving any time for ourselves. Recently a wife came to me, said, "Rabbi, I have a problem." "What's the problem?" I asked. She said, "It's regarding the other party in my husband's life." I thought, the worst, Ten Commandments. She then threw an iPad on the bed. And she said, this is the second wife that I'm competing against. This is a problem. See, in those 5 hours, we're supposed to give time to our spouses. It works both ways. As a matter of fact, when I was away for winter vacation in Miami, we were at a restaurant, and all of a sudden, 8 people came in and sat right next to us. I told my wife, I said, "It's going to be a noisy dinner. They put us right next to this big, you know, family, you know, 6 kids, parents, big kids. You know, it's going to be noisy. We wanted to come just to have a quiet dinner." Turns out it was the quietest dinner we ever had. Everybody had their phone, and everybody was just to themselves. Nobody was talking. It was like a tani dibur. I was impressed by it. But I wondered if I was totally innocent myself. And I'm sorry to tell you that I cannot say that I was totally innocent. We all had our phones also on the table. Maybe it wasn't as extreme, we were all just texting, but from time to time, it was accessible. We weren't innocent. I think that's part of the teshuvah. Part of the 5 hours is, put it this way, why do we love Shabbat meals? I'll tell you why we like Shabbat meals. Not only because of the good food. We like Shabbat meals because we interact with each other. The father tells stories to the kids, we reminisce, we tell old stories, we laugh, we sing a little. But there's tremendous interaction. So we love it. We don't have any gadgets vying for our attention. I think a good Kabbalah for the new year, and I think I'll accept this upon myself as well, at least during dinner, we shouldn't bring these gadgets to the table. That's called Teshuvah. Wouldn't bother me so much if you didn't yet get to the level of eating Kemach Yasham. But if you tell me you don't bring your cell phone to the table, I call you a tzaddik. When we were young, if we would put a baby on the table, our grandmother would scream, "No, don't put a baby on the table." Why? The table is a mizbeah. We don't put children on the table. People don't go on. They take your feet off the table. Come dressed to the table. the respect of the table must be then to leave these gadgets off the table, and then you'll start to see how you'll start to communicate with people, start to talk to your children differently, to your spouses differently. It'll change. Recently I was in Mexico, and before the earthquake, and they asked me to come to an event. There were women had Yom Shikulot Torah. So when I got there, everybody was selling different things, books and I guess Sini'ut stuff, all good things. Then I saw a certain, I don't know what it was, it looked like I couldn't identify it. I thought it was a hat, maybe you put on your head some hat. He said, no, it's a special box that they're selling for the homes. They put in the kitchen. Before dinner, everybody puts their phone in the box. It means people are starting to try to figure out ideas because it's a crisis. Or as I refer to it, it's an insanity. Somebody might have seen the pictures or the video of a rabbi that was about to give a class, almost like this. And the first student came in and he put his recorder next to the rabbi. And then he left. You don't have to be there, he has his recorder. The second student came in and put his recorder. And all of a sudden, before the shiur starts, you see 50 recorders on the rabbi's desk. Well, when the rabbi saw that, he took out his recorder and pushed play and put it in front of them, and he walked out also. That's the insanity that we're talking about. The rabbi doesn't have to talk to the students anymore. The student is there in the shiur by proxy, and the rabbi could also give the shiur over the recorder himself, and nobody's there. The fifth problem, which I'm writing in no order, but it is a problem, maybe the biggest, is the Kavod Bet HaKnesset. We've lost our minds when it comes to this. Have we forgotten what does it mean, the respect of a Bet Knesset? We build the most beautiful Bet Knesset. We fill the Hechal with the most beautiful Sefer Torah. We come here in order to pray to God for our families and our children. God forbid if somebody should defile a Bet Knesset. The Germans, in the night of Kristallnacht, they burnt 1,000 Bate Knesset in one night. God forbid, when we listen to the news, we see a synagogue went up in flames, or somebody puts a swastika outside of a synagogue. It's heart-wrenching. Where is the conscience of congregations that allow their members to bring phones into the synagogue, interrupt the service, and members have no compunction in the middle of the service in the synagogue to fool around with these gadgets and non-life-threatening texts, non-life-threatening emails, and watching videos and passing things around? Have we lost our sanity on what Kedushat Bet HaKnesset is? In America, they don't let cell phones in a courthouse. A courthouse has no sanctity. If anybody ever came from overseas, they won't allow a cell phone in the customs area. The customs area is not a hallowed space. But it's an important space where they're vetting people. There's no room for a cell phone. A Bate Knesset are less than a U.S. courthouse. our synagogues have less value than passport control at JFK? Shame on us. For what? God is so cheap to us. And then we wonder how come our tefillot are not being answered. People are Googling in the middle of the tefillah nonsense. I'm not talking about life-threatening. I'm not talking about hatsana. Stam, shtuyot. That's a isud deoraita. The Torah says, "Mekdashi tirao." You must fear my temple. So look how many avonot this screens cause us. My solution would be, again, if people would only listen. Imagine, as the Hazan is reading Sefer Torah, people are involved. Could you imagine Har Sinai if God was giving the Luchot to us, and as He's giving the Luchot, we're fooling around with this stuff? That's what the Sefer Torah is. It's Kinnitina Tam Sinai. The real advice would be is to keep it in your car or put it on airplane mode. On an airplane, they don't let you put it on. But a bit can answer, we keep it on. Because they tell you, supposedly it's going to interfere with the pilot's mechanisms. Whether that's true or not. But Bitkineset, it's less than a plane, it's less than a courthouse, it's less than a passport control. Namash, we should be ashamed of ourselves. And I said to myself, if my great-grandfather would come to a Bitkineset and see people on a phone in the Bitkineset, he would be like Chania Ma'agal. Where am I? This is an alternate world. Where am I? And we would look at him as a Martian. Well, you don't know what this is, we all do this. He would say, what world are we in over here? He wouldn't recognize anybody and nobody would recognize him. Chaniya Ma'agal all over again. But we're so lost. And it became, as I said in the beginning of this year, the new norm. This is what we do. So that's what's right. Number six, society today has become shallow and empty. People are empty, people are shallow. What does that mean? In the olden days, you talked about our great-grandparents, when they would walk in the street, they were thinking. Projects about the community, about their family, about their parnasah, about life, about society. People used to be deep. Today, everybody became certified clowns. You forgive me. Everybody has his gadgets. They find the video, some nonsense video, of some person acting stupid, and they email it to everybody. Ha 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 ha. This became our we become empty. Everybody became a certified comedian. And a lot of these videos that we're sending, we're laughing at people's misfortunes. Some guy trips, they email it to 1,000 people. Another guy, somebody dropped an egg on him, they laugh at him, everybody sends it. This is getting us excited. How could we think about deep things anymore? How can we think about serious things anymore? How can we think about things that matter anymore if this is what we're involved in all day long? In nonsensical chat groups that we're in. All day long involved in different groups, the family chat, and the shul chat, and the business chat, all day long answering nonsense to people. I'm not even talking about the violence. All day long sending videos and watching videos of shtuyot and havalim. So what ends up happening? It affects us. When we become light. We don't become sophisticated. It takes away our depth. How could you go study Gemara with seriousness if all this junk is just rattling around in your mind? Number seven, of course, is the chinuch of our children are compromised by it. As I mentioned, parents that spend much time on this gadgets, the children will probably learn from that behavior and follow it. Not only that, it takes up our time from educating our children, as was mentioned. Number eight, which to me is one of the most biggest addictions as a result of screens, is the shopping. Go look at all of our homes today. How many boxes are in front of our homes on a single day? We have two piles. This is going back for returns. This is coming. Now, I'm not saying you're not allowed to shop. Don't get me wrong. Although I don't think I ever bought anything on the internet. When my eye was having a problem with my eye, I needed a magnifying glass. So I ordered a magnifying glass. I still have it. It's the only thing I think I ordered on the internet. Now, I'm not saying I don't shop. I must have bought this suit and tie somewhere. Of course, when we need things, we go to a store, we buy. Now, I'm not saying it's forbidden to buy things on the internet either. It's probably a good idea because it saves you a lot of time. I'm talking about the excess, the conspicuous consumption. Because once it becomes so easy just to click, so we get it, we'll return it, we'll bring it, and all of a sudden it becomes just a revolving door. We have nothing to do. We'll buy some. Oh, this looks good, boom, click. You didn't even need it. It wasn't even on your radar. But because you're doing nothing, and all of a sudden, it's easy. They have your credit card already, and they do nothing. So consumption. Our mind is on buying stuff and shopping. Since when did shopping become a sport, or shopping become a something that's praiseworthy? Shopping is a necessity. You need something, you buy it. I'm not saying no. And you want to buy it once in a while, a luxury item. I don't say no either. But everyday shopping? We were young. Our parents took us shopping before the holidays. And of course, if you needed something, your shoes were ripped, you bought a pair of shoes. But it wasn't shopping every day of the year. You just see kids. Kids that used to be on Sundays, go to the schoolyard, throw a football, play baseball. Oh, now they just sit in front of a computer, buying stuff, getting new stuff, returning. It's a problem. Digital insanity. Therefore, I say to Blatai, this is where our teshuvah must be. Everybody must look at their screens like Steve Jobs looked at the screens. Steve Jobs wasn't willing to eat the dog food to sell it. And his family, they restricted it because he knew it's toxic. He knew it's dangerous. He also regretted the excess wealth that he involved himself in, but that was too late. My message to you is over here today, Rabotai, not to throw away your screens, not to break them, not to destroy them, but you must go through all these eight concepts that I mentioned. Number one, Shemirat Einayim, watching the eyes. You know, there's so many people that come to me over the course of the year, and they tell me, Rabbi, I'm working on different projects, and I always almost make it, but then something happens. It almost works out. Last minute, it falls through. There's always something holding me back from success. It's clear to me. If God is not with you, there's no beracha. And with his immorality, there's no beracha. And people that are involved in immorality, they'll almost reach success, and then all of a sudden something happens. And they always wonder, Why aren't they able to get to the finish line? The deal almost comes, and then at last minute something always goes haywire. God is not with you. Because with his immorality, God runs the other way. David HaMelech said, Lo ira ra, I'm never afraid, ki ata imadi, because you're with me. But God is not in a place where there's immorality. So again, I go back to the eight concepts. The eyes, the addiction, 90 days. Set your calendars, guard your eyes. The wasting of time, the loss of concentration, no time for ourselves, this tiny sliver of 5 hours, the funeral stuff. Kavod Beit HaKnesset, shallow and emptiness, chinuch, the toxic chinuch that it brings to our children, and the excesses of shopping. If we can work on this, Rabotai, and make a real teshuvah that's valuable on this topic, I believe it'll change our lives drastically. We have to accept that we're living in societies that's much different than our grandparents and great-grandparents. It's true, there are certain things that society has accepted as the new norm, but it's not our norm. It might be new, but it's not our norm. New norm is good for weather patterns, but it's not good when these new norms run directly opposed to Torah lifestyle. My blessing and prayer to the congregation is, now is the best time of year to make these resolutions, because God is with us. God is close to us during this time of year. Ki ra'ahu b'yotor karov is aseret yemei teshuvah. HaRambam says, during the year, to get God to answer us, you need 10 men in the room. Aseret yemei teshuvah, you don't need a minyan, you can do it alone. One man alone and one lady in a room alone has the value of minyan. That's what he says. And it only happens for 7 more days. And therefore we should talk to God, make resolutions on this topic, and then Be'azat Hashem, the insanity will go away. And then will be fulfilled the Pasuk, Umale'a ha'aretz de'a. The world will be filled with de'a. De'a is knowledge. Kamayim layam mechasim. We will be saved from all the waters of floods and all the waters of inundation. Instead, the flood waters of knowledge will fill the world. And to the congregation, I bless that Be'azat Hashem, with these intentions to do right, God will inscribe us. Tikatvu v'tihatmu b'sifram shel tzaddikim. The tzaddik is the tzaddik of 90. One that can go 90 days without falling. And then Be'azat Hashem, from that, then comes Osher, Bechavod, and all the blessings to follow. Amen.